Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Free Beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. Well, guys, a very busy day for you guys yesterday. Maybe 17-hour day, maybe, something around that range with the National Signing Day and everything. How are you guys feeling on this beautiful Thursday morning?
I'm going to go ahead and guess that Graham was not up for the early signings at 7 o'clock or 6:30 like I was.
I was not. Well, even if I had been up, I was up close to that. It is one of the beauties, the differences in our jobs is I don't have to pay quite as close attention to every minute detail of every 15-year-old. In fact, that is in the columnist description, that a 15-year-old recruit, 16-year-old recruit can no longer change your dinner plans like they can when you're truly on the beat. That's in the description.
Yeah, well, unless of course that is Amani Bates, I would imagine that would probably be a little different. So
Amani Bates actually, I did not handle the Amani Bates situation.
Wasn't there a tree that fell or something along those lines?
There was so many things happening at once. A tree fell in our backyard. I was on an interview with a pastor. Like, I wasn't even in the sports world. Our power went out, and then I panicked and left my wife to deal with it all and went over to my mother's house where she had power and Wi-Fi to write the column on Amani Bates. So that's how that went. Yeah.
A great look behind the curtain for sure. Oh man! Go ahead, Chris.
Well, so yeah, but you know that's basically how it goes on signing day. Is you know you're up early and you're done late because you know coaches can put their tweets out there at 2:30, 3 o'clock whenever they get their last fax. I don't know what they do now. PDFs. I still like to think they're using the fax machine. They could be like, all right, we're done for the day. Like, yeah, well, that's not how it works. And that we just got the information. Now we have to process it. So, and there was a lot to process yesterday. I mean, not just with the kids coming in next year, but with the current roster and transfers and guys leaving early. I mean, it's been a busy couple days for. Yep. The last week of the season.
Yep, and we'll start off here with a little bit of a sign day recap, and we'll talk about Michigan State's new quarterback. They flipped a four-star linebacker, and I think it's interesting that the top three recruits on the at least by the 24/7 rankings anyway did not sign yesterday. So we'll see what happens there, and we'll talk about the guys we like from the people that did sign yesterday. And then, as Chris alluded to, we have a lot of football news over the past week, including Shakir Brown and Naquan Jones. Talk about Peyton Thorne, Chris Jackson, the idea of the Spartans actually playing in a bowl game, ? And then we'll preview this weekend's Maryland game, and then maybe touch on basketball at the very end, depending on time. All right, well, let's start on signing day. And as I said, we're not going to talk about a guy who signed a national letter of intent yesterday. I want to start with the quarterback situation, where in the midst of all the signing day stuff, Michigan State and this guy also announced that he was transferring from Temple to Michigan State in quarterback Anthony Russo. Let's start with where do you see him fitting in? Is he going to be the starter, or is it going to be Peyton Thorne? Or I mean, how does this shake up the quarterback room?
Well, it's going to be an interesting situation. I mean, it's hard to say right now because when you look at it, I mean, they've got six quarterbacks now. They've got Hampfe coming in the recruiting class. They've got Russo coming in from Temple as a graduate transfer. He'll have 1 year of eligibility left. Then you've got Peyton Thorne. You've got Rocky Lombardi. You've got Theo Day, and you've got Noah Kemp. That's six. I mean, that's more than a team needs. I mean, four is about what you want from a scholarship number. I would anticipate they're going to be attrition there, and I think there's probably going to be, I would not be surprised if there's similar situations that happen at other positions either, along the way as more guys enter the portal, as Mel Tucker's college scouting bureau if you will takes kind of interest and digs into some of the film on these kids. But the Russo addition, I mean, at minimum, you get a guy who started at the FBS level, and has thrown a lot of passes, which is something that, you know, going into this year, all you had was Rocky Lombardi, and you know, Graham, the depth that was there at quarterback. I mean, I think we've kind of over the course of the last month or two seen the situation. I mean, it's Rocky Lombardi, it's Peyton Thorne. Those two might be flipping at this point. But Theo A and Noah Kim seem like non-factors and probably the guys who you would look at and say they'll probably be out the door.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think this speaks, like, I thought they'd bring in a transfer QB. I did not think it would happen this soon. It's been a weird time, right? It's, you know, and 4 days ago, you know, and I'm just working on a column about this right now, the idea that it was, MSU fans thought they had Drew Brees from, a quarter. And then obviously things came back to earth, but you have a weird situation where the signing day happens in season. So Thorne's going to make his second start this week, and you just brought in a guy who could supplant him next year as you signed a guy in Hamp Faye that is probably the guy you look at as your quarterback of the future. So the weird dynamics all around, and I think that, look, that's part of college football. What I thought was interesting is, you know, it does speak to their lack of trust in what they have in the quarterback room. And that, I don't know that I would trust it. I'm just saying the players can see that. When you bring in a guy who's started as many games as he has and thrown, you know, 44 touchdowns and all that stuff that Russo has, they can see that you don't trust them to be the guys next year. So that'll have an impact in the room, however it is, as Chris alluded to, transfers and all that stuff. That's going to have a ripple effect in the quarterback room. And that's going to, I mean, it's going to be felt. And so I don't know what I'm guessing, as Chris said, Theo Day and Noah Kim are probably not long for MSU's program. I don't know what Rocky Lombardi will do. I think he knows he's been surpassed by one guy and they're bringing in another. I think it's ultimately the biggest, it's sort of an affirmation that they don't think Rocky Lombardi can be the guy. Because if you thought you had two guys, one of which may be it, you wouldn't bring in an outside guy. And but the other thing I would say is, because I think the plan right now, and I don't think you bring Russo in knowing he's going to start, but I think Russo wouldn't come to Michigan State if he didn't think he was going to be the guy. And they might think they're going to have Russo for a year and then, turn it over to Hamp Faye in a quarterback competition. Well, plans change with quarterbacks. You look at MSU, and Connor Cook was not the plan. Right, they wanted that to go another year with Andrew Maxwell and then turn it over to Damian Terry or somebody else, have a true QB competition. Kirk Cousins was not the plan. That was Nick Foles originally, and then it was Keith Nichol. You can go way back in the 90s with Todd Schultz and Bill Burke. That was Gus Ornstein's job, and then it was going to be Ryan Van Dyke. You know, like the transfer, the hot freshman, doesn't matter at quarterback as much. It's a performance position, and everybody can see it. So for Peyton Thorne, you just keep doing yourself. And if you're the best guy, you're going to be the guy, and no matter what is being brought in around you.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind here, too, is class separation. And the year of extra eligibility for these kids is going to be critical, because now what you have is next year in 2021 – Peyton Thorne will still be a redshirt freshman. He'll still have 4 years of eligibility left. Hamp Faye will have 4 or 5 years of eligibility left. There's not a lot of separation there. Rocky Lombardi will still be a junior. Theo Day will still be a sophomore. Noah Kim will still be a true, or I guess you would call him a true freshman. So now all of a sudden he's in the same class with Faye. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics that goes into this beyond simply just how who is and who isn't playing right now. There's going to be guys, I mean, including Peyton Thorne. I think he's going to look at this and say, I have 4 years left of eligibility. Is the guy behind me going to knock me out? Am I going to get a fair chance to start next year when they're bringing in a grad transfer? And he may say, I've got a free waiver this year to go wherever I want and play immediately. That came into play on Tuesday as well, or Wednesday as well. So there are so many different things that come into play with how this room is going to shake out. And there may also be a situation where Peyton Thorne says, you know what? I am going to win this job. This is where I want to be. My high school teammate is here, two of them. I feel comfortable and confident that I can be the guy. So, and I think that might be part of what Mel Tucker's doing here as well, on top of everything else, because he has talked so much in the last couple weeks about his quarterback needs to be the best and biggest competitor on this team. If you're Peyton Thorne and you hear that and you see him bring it in and say, all right, bring it on, big guy. I'll take on all and any challengers. Same with Rocky Lombardi. And, you know, there also may be a moment where someone says, you know what? I gotta step away. I gotta think about my future, and I want to go somewhere else or do something else. I want to play. So there's so much that goes into this between now and probably January, I would imagine. We'll find out probably in the next few weeks, because if you have a free waiver, you want to get to another program right away and get involved in their program, get involved in their winter conditioning, get involved in spring practices. So I would anticipate the next few weeks we're going to see this room shake up quite a bit.
All right, well, let's move on to the actual signing day process, where probably the biggest news in Michigan State football is that they were able to flip four-star linebacker Mano Teote. This is a big time recruit for Michigan State in flipping this four-star guy. So, and obviously, with the caveat with him comes with his brother, who was at USC, but has also since entered the transfer portal, and it's kind of rumored that Michigan State might be able to land his services too. So it feels like this could be a potentially nice 2-for-1 package deal for the Spartans.
Yeah, and this is a spot where they really need some talent infusion and depth. I would anticipate that sometime soon we're gonna hear about Antoine Simmons and his plans. I don't anticipate him coming back, and I don't think he has a reason to come back. I mean, I think, you know, you're talking 6 out of the 7 games in double figures in tackles, and only one game that he was hurt, and he was in and out of the lineup at Iowa, and you saw how important that was. But this is a spot that, I mean, with right now they've been playing three linebackers. They've been playing Chase Klein and Noah Harvey along with Simmons. If you're losing, I'd say 98% to 99% sure you're going to lose Simmons. And I'm not even sure if he'll play at Maryland. Same with those other guys who declared, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But you needed speed. You needed speed and space. You needed guys that, you know, if you look at kind of that Devin Bush model of linebackers that can go laterally and tackle on screens, cover, that's what you need when you have a 4-2-5. You need those linebackers to be able to cover half the field. I mean, it's not, you don't split it into thirds like you do in a 4-3. I mean, you got to be able to cover the whole field. So I think, you know, obviously Ma is a pretty heavy recruit. I mean, you're talking about top 200 kid, one of the best linebackers in the country. He's, you know, he's kind of a tackle machine, and watching his film, he's aggressive, and they definitely need that. So I do think that, you know, they got to get more linebacker speed. So let's see if his brother, I think it's of course, that's the one I didn't look up the pronunciation on. His brother's a five-star, former five-star. Yep. He's a starter at USC. He's had injury problems. But, I mean, you're also talking about a kid who in a couple years ago in 2018 was the number one inside linebacker, the number 15 player in the country. And, you know, he knows guys on the team. I mean, he was high school teammates with Jalen Naylor and Jacob Isaiah out of Bishop Gorman. So, I mean, if they were able to make this a 2-for deal, that's huge. I mean, especially when you've got name products. And let's face it, Graham, the recruiting world is all about – Mel Tucker can say all he wants. You know, he's not chasing stars. He's not doing that. You know, he's looking at the eye test on the players. But that matters. I mean, that eye test from a guy who was an NFL coach, you look at NFL talent, and most of those guys are 5-stars or very high 4-stars.
Yeah, no, I think this was, I mean, not only star-wise for, there's no doubt. Like, it's not like, and I understand when you look at the recruiting classes and the best of D'Antonio's recruits, right? Like, it's Le'Veon Bell, Darquez Dennard, all sorts of guys who were not heralded who built that program, Shalit Calhoun, Trey Waynes, all that stuff. But Alabama is not winning despite having 2- and 3-star kids. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really how it works.
Ohio State's class. Look at Ohio State's class.
I mean, they're not completely off on this talent stuff. I also thought it was important just in terms of buzz, right? Here's a guy who, you know, if you're selling a dream and you're trying to recruit, here's a guy who's bought in, who's a heralded dude. Here's a guy who becomes part of a signature player in the class, maybe. You know, that sort of stuff, I think, makes a difference and can matter. And so I think just in terms of perception, it was a good moment for MSU yesterday to have that, especially when, you know, the 2 4-star guys in your class are, you know, one's flirting with Notre Dame, the other is not signing till, you know, February. You know, that sort of stuff is to have a guy on that day say, I'm coming to MSU, that who's as heralded as he is, I thought was a big deal.
Yeah, and I think the other part of the perception piece that comes in is between now and February, you got other kids at other schools that are on the fence, and you've shown that you're willing to play the cutthroat game. That's something I don't know if D'Antonio and his staff really wanted to get into. I think they oftentimes, I mean, they flip kids, but you never saw them flipping kids from Power 5 schools. I mean, you saw them fill a need with a Jaden Reed or a Peyton Thorne or a Maverick Hansen that had MAC offers or lower. I mean, can you remember them flipping a Power 5 kid? I think there may be maybe a handful at the most.
I don't think so, because part of their whole thing was they didn't want kids to get flipped, and they didn't flip, you know, under D'Antonio. It was a very different approach. And I'm not saying it was wrong either, you know. I mean, it worked for them.
But this is part of the culture shift. I mean, you listen to Tucker talking about, you know, running a college and high school scouting department separately. You know, you talk about getting involved in high-end recruits late in the process and turning them. And then, you know, having guys, you know, I mean, a lot of times D'Antonio will cut bait if guys are flirting, even if they go to a camp somewhere else. And, you know, this is going to be a situation where it seems like they're going to stay in the mix for Estime as long as they can to get him to sign. Whatever happens with Vandermark, who knows? The same with Benny. I mean, Benny sounds like he's a little bit of a different case, but still, I mean, there's a lot that's going on, I think, right now that Tucker is doing subliminally for high school coaches and recruits, saying, listen, this is we're treating this football thing as business now, and you need to come along with us.
Yeah, for some, it'll be for some kids and not for others. If you're a kid who like the D'Antonio way, there's nothing wrong with leaving. And this is an opportunity to do so without, you know, any being and frankly, I think without the waiver from the NCAA, most of these kids would have gotten a waiver. The coaching change really helps that.
We've heard about the culture shift, but I think a lot of what we saw yesterday and maybe in the last week or two has been the first time that we've seen an outward shift in culture.
And it is fascinating because, you know, like the whole idea behind Mel Tucker is that he is going to raise the level of recruiting, right? And because that, I mean, that's why he's being paid $5.5 million and his staff's being paid another $6 million, that they are going to get in on kids that D'Antonio and his group did not. And they're going to do that year in and out. And that's the way that Michigan State might be able to sustain it longer than D'Antonio did, right? That's sort of the question. The thing is, the D'Antonio way actually came much closer to working than I think a lot of people realize. And so it's not like before Mel Tucker can really dominate recruiting and show that he's got to get to where D'Antonio was. Like, I'm going to read you a few names from the 2010 and 11 class. These are two classes in 2010 and 11. These are the two classes that built the great run they had largely. And this is what you got to do. You got to be able to put a couple classes back to back. Lawrence Thomas, Donovan Clark, RJ Williamson, Tywan Jones, Jack Allen, Darian Harris, Shalit Calhoun, Connor Cook, Trey Waynes. One class. The class the year before, Will Golston, Max Bull, Isaiah Lewis, Marcus Rush, Curtis Drummond, Travis Jackson, Mike Sadler, Darqueze Dennard, Le'Veon Bell. Like that. And if you look at
a lot of hits.
A lot of hits. And
who were the misses in those classes?
And if you look at
who were the heralded misses in that class? Because that's part of it too.
Right. And there were later on there were a lot more. Like 2014, not as good a pan out, it didn't pan out. But what's really interesting is 2015 wound up being a good class for D'Antonio with LJ Scott, Raekwon Williams, David Dowell, Brian Lewerke, Felton Davis, Kari Willis was ranked number 830. Like that's a pretty good class. And so if 2016 works out, and it didn't, it was a horrible set of circumstances and went about as awry as a class can go, and that was his best class. But he would have, again, I think, put two classes together, and he'd probably still be the coach, and the circumstances would be different, and the last 4 years would have been different. And so it is interesting to see how the D'Antonio way required hitting on a lot of guys. But they were also – 2015, ranked 23rd, third in the Big Ten, I think, fourth in the Big Ten. 2016, ranked 17th, third in the Big Ten. 2009 and 10, ranked 22nd overall, fourth in the Big Ten. So, like, it's not like his classes at their best weren't really good. For Mel Tucker's imprint to be greater than D'Antonio's on a recruiting front, you're going to have to start looking at top 20 classes, top three in the Big Ten. Now, the whole Big Ten has gotten better if you look at the number of teams recruiting in the top 40. So that can be a little misleading. But you're going to have to look at top 20 national classes. That's what Mel Tucker's being brought in for. And, again, if the proof's on the field and he's recruiting guys who are, who are panning out, if he's recruiting Le'Veon Bells and Trey Waynes and Darqueze Dennards and Kari Willis's who aren't highly, nobody's going to care about the stars and all that. But essentially, those do matter, and those do make a difference in trying to sustain it and keep up with an Ohio State team that is recruiting off the charts. Like, he's being brought in to bring in top 20 classes, and so that will be – and I think this class, as they play out on the field, is the first – this is the beginning of being able to really judge Mel Tucker. I mean, it really is, because I don't think – obviously, there are things you can look at and from a micro perspective or little bit things here and there from this last year, but these are his guys. This is his first class, and it's a weird year. I get it's not, it's first classes are probably not going to be your best class, but they're still guys you chose.
Well, speaking of Mel Tucker's first recruiting class, let's just talk about those guys that they have signed, who have signed pen to paper and are officially Spartans at this point. I will start with the fact that this is something you guys have already alluded to, is that the Michigan State's top three ranked recruits in this class, not including Ma Naoteote. Oh man,
Naoteote.
Ma Naoteote. Okay, that's gonna take some seconds. Not including him. So their top three recruits heading into Wednesday: Oak Park defensive lineman Rashawn Benny, and St. Joseph, New Jersey running back Audric Estime, and offensive lineman Gino Vandermark. Those guys have not signed. Benny and Estime had previously said they were not signing this week, and I think the day before Vandermark said he was not signing on that day. So who knows what's going on with those. Like you said, Estime got the Notre Dame offer right before signing day, so that might throw some things into flux, and Michigan State's going to have to grind it out for him. But anyway, so out of Tucker's signing day press conference, who did he seem the highest on based on your impressions? Or who's a guy or two, or three or four, that you guys really like in this class, Chris?
Well, I think one of the guys that he talked about that's a little less heralded is Derek Harmon, who's about as big as a semi. I think he's about they actually listed him now at 6'6" and 360. Graham's well familiar with those numbers because he's following all the recruiting. That's why. Come on, people. Jeez. But yes, he called him a large human. He said he occupies four hands. Some of the other guys, I think they can make it. I mean, obviously, Hamp Fay, when you talk about quarterbacks and everything that's going on, I think that's a natural situation, but don't fall in love with the freshman quarterback. See Damian Terry 2013, right? But I think the guys that I'm curious to see, Harmon, obviously, whether they keep him on offense or keep him on defense at defensive tackle, or if they flip him to the other side, will be interesting. I think that they've got A.J. Kirk and Michael Gravely are two guys that are coming in in January, along with Faye and along with Ethan Boyd from East Lansing. But I think those two in particular are going to be interesting because those are guys that could probably occupy. They could move from safety, one or both of them, to linebacker. And they, like I said, they need a speed and pursuit ability, and those guys are safeties who've got that hybrid ability. I think Alex Akello and Tyson Watson, with their size at defensive end, I mean, you look at that one, 6'5", 6'6", long arms. They've got the ability to get to the quarterback and shed blockers on the tackle. Those are things that you know, you other than Kenny Willekes, who kind of you talk about those quintessential D'Antonio recruits that come out of nowhere. You know, if Austin Robertson and all the other guys, Josh King, pan out and don't have their off-field issues, we may never hear about Kenny Willekes, right? But Watson and Okello have that size and ability that are there. And, you know, those I think are the guys that, you know, and then they beefed up on the offensive line too. The other guy that I'd say curious to see, because I don't really know, and I don't think anybody really knows what to expect from Brandon Baldwin. You know, kid who played basketball at Southfield A&T, took to football late, but he's got the measurables at 6'7", 315, transferring in from Independence Community College, and apparently his practice tape from his first year there is what landed him a number of Power 5 offers, but hasn't played a college game yet. So he has 4 years of eligibility left, and they really need edge blockers as well. So those are the guys for me. And I know that's quite a bit, but Graham, how about you? Who you're the recruit, Nick, here. How do you size this up?
No, I mean, I do. It's very noticeable what he's trying, how much the size stuff. I mean, Derek Harmon, you know, would kill somebody if he sat on him. And you know, I mean, that's 6'6", 350. And that's, and you know, the fascination with, you know, the way Mel Tucker read the size of his players during his press conference, you know, with this average offensive line, defensive line, even his quarterback was very telling. And to me, it's largely about the lines. That's where MSU is falling off a little bit. And that's where I'm curious. And, you know, it's a hard position to project. Like, Ethan Boyd is not an overly heralded prospect, but he's a guy who's built to be a tackle, right? 6'7", long, all that stuff. You know, I mean, Jack Conklin was not a heralded prospect. Nobody offered him a scholarship. And when you look at some of the misses D'Antonio had and some of the misses that they had late on the offensive line, it's clear that and recruiting gurus had late. It is a hard position. And I think, to me, D'Antonio didn't bring in the Charles Rogers, the Plaxico Burresses, the T.J. Ducketts. He didn't bring in those sort of skill position players. Some developed, and he had some really good middle round NFL draft picks, but he recruited well at the skill position area for the most part.
I believe his only 4-star quarterback was Andrew Maxwell.
Yeah. And so what I want to see, though,
I don't know if Nickel was a 4-star, and I think Foles was a 3-star.
Well, I believe they've got to get guys there, and then they have some, I think, a receiver right now or blazing difference makers. That's how you compete with an Ohio State team that is maybe better throughout the roster. But up front is how he recruits, how this staff recruits up front, what these guys turn into over the next couple of years is, to me, the whole ball of wax. Because if you don't fix that, you're never going to get out of what you're in right now. And
D'Antonio's second best offensive lineman, who was it? Because I think we all have to assume that
Jack Allen maybe is
number one. Yeah, I mean, you know, none of the offensive linemen. I mean, there was Dan France. There was, you mentioned Donovan Clark earlier.
Yep.
I feel like was Jamichael Dean early in his tenure as well. I mean, but there were not a lot of offensive linemen that you looked at that they brought into that program and said those are future pros. There weren't a lot of offensive linemen who really even had much of a sniff on rosters. And I think that's where you're starting to see at least Tucker's NFL influence come in with gauging and got the size. I mean, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that Michigan State was churning offensive linemen into the pros, you know, even if they played 2-3 years. You know, that was in the Perlis and Saban era. It's interesting that it's fallen off like it has, especially for a school that was so run dominant as Michigan State was under D'Antonio.
Yeah, so a guy I don't think really talked about much is Charles Brantley, the 3-star cornerback out of Venice High School in Florida. So, you know, in looking at this class, Chris, and now you and I, we loved Angelo Gross's high school tape when we talked about this last year, and he's obviously been a pretty decent contributor for the team this year. I don't see quite the impact guy like that on this roster. I don't know if you feel that way about anybody on this group or not.
AJ Kirk's kind of the guy that I've seen that I like his tape in terms of what he can do in pursuit and how hard he hits. You know, I think he's one that stood out to me. Brantley's tape was good. I think he's, you know, I think Akello's got the size and explosiveness and get off at the line that he could be, but I think he's also raw. You know, I'd say those guys in particular, not seeing it on the offensive guys. That's one thing. I mean, you know, Estime, if they land Estime, however.
Yes, that's
Estime, you talk about getting in low on a kid and really, they got in on him before his senior season, blew him up into a 4-star prospect. That to me for Mel Tucker is a good thing moving forward, because that shows that they identified and landed, you know. Do they land it long-term and secure it? I mean, that's still going to be up in the air. I mean, we've got until Friday to see if these kids sign now or if they're going to wait. You know, obviously the Notre Dame situation with Estime is interesting. And I think Vandermark also plays pretty angry, too, in watching some of his film. And Rayshon Benny, too. I mean, Rayshon Benny, I don't know where he ends up. I mean, I think he showed shock at both lines, you know. And so there are guys that really jump out. But, you know, a guy like Gross that I think can come in and make the impact right away to me is Kirk. Just again, simply because I think that next linebacker situation, you know, I'm not sure that Harvey is long term or short term, you know, because those guys aren't going laterally, and you need to in that 4-2-5.
Let's stick with the Michigan State football here. We got, boy, so much has happened since we last recorded. Let's start with Julian Barnett, a guy who I forgot to put on the outline here, but I just remembered that we haven't even talked about that. He was the 4-star recruit in last year.
He was a true freshman last year.
Okay, at all.
The 2019.
2019, all runs together. He has put his name in the transfer portal. He was a 4-star recruit and one of the more heralded recruits in that class. So he's gone, and Shakir Brown and Naquan Jones have announced they are not returning to the team, whereas Brown is a junior who declared for the draft, and Jones is a senior who kind of declined to use his free year, and he is heading to the NFL.
Let's be clear on that. They have announced that they're not returning to the team in 2021. We don't know for sure about Saturday's game at Maryland.
It could be a little surprise for us on Saturday night. We'll see.
I don't see any reason for them to play. I think the same is going to happen with Antoine Simmons at some point in the few coming days, too.
Gotcha. Well, let's start with Julian Barnett then, I guess. I don't know if it's a shock that he put his name in the transfer portal. He's a kid who has seen his playing time diminish quite a bit. I don't know, you know, he kind of got yo-yoed back and forth between offense and defense. And, you know, for someone like Justin Lane, that ended up not being a big deal, but everyone kind of reacts differently to situations like that. And just to seem like they seem like you can never find the perfect spot for Barnett, and that led to not playing and eventually leaving the program here.
I think the difference between Barnett and Justin Lane is Justin Lane came in with an idea that he was going to possibly be a cornerback, but they were going to give him his first shot at receiver, whereas Barnett was always recruited as a defensive player. Then all of a sudden they had some injuries on the offensive side during camp and said, hey, maybe we want to put you on offense. And that didn't start things off the right way. You know, they only had a handful of plays that he would run, basically used a full year of eligibility as a true freshman, trying to get up to speed on offense and just running fly patterns, and made a few catches here and there, but wasn't targeted all that much. Then all of a sudden you flip him back over to defense, which was the plan. And then maybe play them both ways. Then there's a coaching change. I did hear that there was a situation on the sideline with a comment that he made that was picked up within earshot of Mel Tucker that was kind of the final straw. And, you know, that to me was maybe a message sender to other guys that, you know, you're either in or you're out. You're in with this team's and what we're doing, or you need to pack your bags. I don't think it was the determining factor. I think that there were other issues. I'd heard that, you know, he didn't really devote himself to learning the new playbook in the off season and in the summer as well. So, you know, it just seemed like it was a combustible situation. Now, that said, would you be shocked if Mel Tucker revisits it after the season and says, listen, kid, we need to get on the same page. I think you're a talented kid, but let's find a middle ground, maybe. You know, that's – but, you know, he's also shown a willingness to go out and get guys too. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be – I think there's more of a chance for him to look into the portal and get experienced players than maybe bring back a younger player who he's already had butting heads with.
I was not surprised. You know, I was curious how quickly guys are doing this. And I understand signing day is right now, so this week mattered for some of that stuff. But a guy like Julian Barnett has, you know, he's going to have options. Not everybody has options. We saw Connor Hayward leave and come back, right? It's not as clear. A lot of guys are going to transfer, and there's not really going to be a great place for them. Barnett, that's not going to be the case, I don't think. And so I was I thought, you know, maybe you stick it out through the season. You see who leaves, who goes, how it ends. But when you're that heralded and 2 years in, you really haven't found a fit. I also don't blame him. This isn't who he signed up to play for. I think it's a blow for MSU because he's a legitimate four-star athlete that didn't work out. And that's those guys, you know, at MSU, just you just can't – you can only lose so many of them. And obviously losing Shakur Brown, they're, you know – I thought Brown would do another year. That surprised me too. So I think it's a blow for MSU in the sense that he's a really talented kid, but I don't know if he was ever in the plans for them. It just didn't seem like it was working out. And I don't blame those kids for looking for a fresh start.
Yeah, I think back to the Iowa game where he got the start at the nickelback spot and just looked lost. I mean, you know, he was getting turned in circles on defense, and ultimately that's where you started to see Gross and Michael Dowell play that spot a little bit more when they had moved Shakur Brown to the edge with Chris Jackson out and hurt. So, is he a nickelback? Is he a cornerback? Is he a wide receiver? I think that's – you know, that's one of those things. I think the Julian Barnett situation probably would have been handled a lot differently and probably a lot better had there been a spring practice, had there been a traditional summer and fall camp. I think that, you know, the rushed nature, maybe they do revisit it, given a couple weeks and a couple months to kind of process it and say there is a future still. But I don't know. I think only time will tell on that. But I think you're right, Graham, though. This isn't what Barnett signed up for. So it is a two-way street. It's got to be mutual.
I agree with you about Shakur Brown. Like, he's had a good season, and I like him quite a bit, but I didn't think he would actually declare for the draft. I thought he could probably use another year on campus. But if he's getting feedback from the NFL or somebody or whatnot that, you know, he's ready, then maybe he gets a Josiah Scott situation, does get drafted after all.
Yeah, I don't know what he is as a prospect. I really wasn't, you know, Josiah Scott, you kind of had some time to look into it. You kind of figured that could happen. You know, I don't know what he is as a prospect, how the NFL sees him. He was obviously a terrific playmaker this year. It wasn't that, you know, these weren't – who's the cornerback for Dallas in the 95 Super Bowl who had the two interceptions, won the MVP, and turned into a big contract?
Larry Brown, why would you do that to me? Why would you do that to me today? I'm having such a good day.
I forgot we had a Steelers fan.
I mean, if Yancey Thigpen runs the right route – and everyone blames Neil O'Donnell for those throws, but if Yancey Thigpen runs the right route,
we're going to do a little side on this podcast on Yancey Thigpen, because Yancey Thigpen cost two teams Super Bowls, both of our teams. And this is, he caught, you're saying he cost the Steelers the Super Bowl 95. I'm telling you, he might have cost the Lions the Super Bowl the same year. And I'll tell you why. Oh, the Lions win seven straight games at the end of 95, right? And it's the only year. It's the Herman Moore, Johnny Morton, Brett Perriman, Barry Sanders. It's the only year Scott Mitchell looks like a great pro. They're blowing people out. The last game, and they started 3-6, so they don't have a great record to work with. The last game of the year, if Pittsburgh beats Green Bay, the Lions get a home game. And I believe if they had gotten a home playoff game, they would have gone straight through to the Super Bowl the way they were playing. Instead, Yancey Thigpen drops a pass in the back of the end zone against the Packers that sends the Lions to Philadelphia, where they have this disastrous playoff game, and they haven't touched the playoffs. Well, they've touched the playoffs since, but they haven't, you know. I mean, that was the last great team they had. So, Yancey Thigpen, we're both in on that. That is an awful, awful human being.
You and Atkins really need to trade roles, because that's the best storytelling I've ever heard. It is the quintessential classic Lions fan storytelling.
Yes.
For the revisionist history that 18 things happen, we would be there. Except you neglect the simple fact that Dallas was probably the best team in the NFL that year.
Right. No, 15-year-old Graham did not handle it well.
Yeah, for those who may not remember the game, Philadelphia won that game 58-37 in the playoffs.
What a shootout. That wasn't exactly a we lost on a last second touchdown and competed on the road game.
No, I got a Barry Sanders jersey for Christmas that year and never wore it because I thought it was cursed after that game. Like we were at our cousins in Rochester, New York, and it was a 4 o'clock kickoff, and my dad and I looked at each other and said, you know, they're going to lose if we watch it here. There's too many distractions around Christmas. Like, this isn't working. So we drove all the way back from 8 a.m. to get home in time for that kickoff. I put on the Barry Sanders jersey that was still draped over the couch from Christmas morning. And it was like, what, 58-37 or 57-30, whatever it was.
I hear
it in my head now. We should have stayed there.
Well, now that I'm looking at the box score, it was 51-7 at one point in the third quarter.
It was a disaster. Brett Perriman like tore his ACL. The whole day was just a
classic. Classic line.
Pop quiz. So Scott Mitchell got benched in the third quarter. Do you know who came in for him and threw three touchdown passes without looking it up?
95?
Yeah. 95 Lions.
Oh, boy.
Without Google searching it.
God, if you gave me like 20 minutes, I could figure this in my head.
I want to say Neil Lomax just because I just want to say the name Neil Lomax.
He was known as the Magic Man in the early 90s.
Oh,
my God. Don Magikowski,
yeah.
Great.
My goodness.
Oh, what a year. What a year.
Wow, we really took this sideways.
We really did.
I don't know. People enjoy it.
I think so.
Anyways, okay. How did we get into that?
It was Shakir Brown. It was Shakir Brown.
Yancey Thigpen, they correlate.
What I was saying about Shakir Brown is his interceptions, though, weren't the Larry Brown interceptions of that Super Bowl where the ball just kind of came to him and he turned it into a big payday. I mean, Shakir Brown was a playmaker. He made some great plays on the ball this year. So he may be seen by the NFL differently. I mean, those guys who are confident and aggressive and can make plays on the ball, there's value. So I don't know his NFL worth, but, I've come to realize that if you're a guy who's, hears you're going to be drafted, knows you're going to be drafted, and, the third, fourth, fifth round, it's hard to come back and risk the injuries and all the stuff that goes on with college football when there's that sort of payday out there.
I think that the play, there's one play in particular that probably did it in both directions. One, I think it was maybe his best play of the season. And two, he also saw what happened with Berkelee Holman when he had that pick in the Northwestern game and he knocked him out. And we still haven't heard an update on him. He's back in Evanston, but I've been keeping an eye on it. The receiver who Brown knocked out, but he made that interception breaking on the ball, showing some shock, to get it away from a receiver, and quickness on the break to get to it. I think that from one, the physical standpoint, if you're an NFL scout and you see that, you say, wow, that's a big league play. And two, if you're the player, and you see someone, a guy get hurt, you realize this is how quickly it can be taken away from me, and I need to move.
Yeah, so the defensive back room is going to look quite a bit different next year with Brown and Barnett gone, and a third guy
next year, maybe this week.
Yeah, sure. And then the third guy, Chris Jackson, Mel Tucker said this week is no longer with the team. Do you guys have anything to add regarding him? He's a guy who I don't think I'd ever even heard about until this season, and he was playing a lot early, and then, of course, he hadn't played the past couple games, and now he's off the team.
Yeah, he was a surprise starter in the Rutgers game. He started the first two games. I think he started at Michigan. Then injuries kind of got him. He missed the Iowa game. Missed the Indiana game. He was hurt. Came back against Maryland and Northwestern against Northwestern off the bench, and then missed the last two. From what I gather, and from what I've heard in terms of reporting, he just quit football. And I would assume that it's a injury-related situation. Did some due diligence, nothing in the courts or anything of that nature. But from what I've heard is he just quit football, and I think that may be where Tucker revisits. Now, they obviously thought enough of him to start him. But some guys get to a point where it's just like physically too much anymore, and you just walk away before you have worse things happen. But if the kid doesn't want to play through pain, if the kid wants to explore other options, I don't know how much it's doing, but that's going to be a situation to watch. But that's what I had heard on that, is that he had just quit football.
Well, let's move on to other Michigan State football news. Tucker also said this week that Peyton Thorne would be Michigan State's starting quarterback this week against Maryland. I don't think that is a surprise to anybody, especially after the second quarter he had last week against Penn State, which was an amazing quarter, as we all know. I think you guys alluded to it earlier in the podcast. Do you guys have any thoughts on the Thorne announcement?
I think it was obvious at this point that, yeah. I mean, Rocky Lombardi hasn't been helped, but I think Rocky Lombardi's shot there, I think, is, I don't want to say shot's over, but his era there is over. They moved on to Thorne at this point. Thorne played so well for a while last week. There's just no way this wasn't going to be the decision. It would have been beyond puzzling. And and what's interesting now for Thorne is, he doesn't have enough time to totally take the job and say, this is my job, and that was a mistake to bring in Anthony Russo, and probably shouldn't recruit Hampton Fay and all that stuff. You don't have time for that. You got one game, maybe a bowl game. But he can certainly set a tone that he's sort of the incumbent, that it goes through him. And if he has a really good game or two, then that, he'll be looked at by his teammates, I think, and maybe even belief in his coaches a little differently. And so these are important times for him.
Yeah, I think it's an audition in a lot of ways. It's an audition for right now to be the starter at Michigan State in the next year, and it could very well be an audition for other programs. If he sees these, he's getting sandwiched right now. I mean, he's getting sandwiched by a graduate transfer and a true freshman coming in that the staff that is there now that didn't recruit him feel they want and that they want to play with. So he could be treating this one way or the other as an audition to show the staff that he is the guy, or show another staff that he can come in right away and play for them. Because it's going to be such a weird situation with the free year of eligibility plus the waiver, the 1 year one time transfer waiver. But Thorne, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. You think about where Connor Cook was as a redshirt freshman when he came in for Andrew Maxwell beyond the redshirt freshman year, his sophomore year, because his first real action was at that Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl that year as a redshirt freshman. And I think back to the spring game where he took a snap and it was like the Benny Hill music was playing and he was running in circles, or maybe that might have been Tyler O'Connor. It's hard to keep track on that one, but he did not look good as in the spring game. The following year, early on, he didn't look great, but the more reps he got in game, the more you saw the confidence build, the more you saw the quarterback that he was. And I think you've seen that. I mean, listen, the kid completed 11 straight passes against Ohio State, no matter what coverage they were in. They might have been playing off, but that's still 11 straight passes. You got to get through and read the defense and get that. He completed 12 straight passes against Penn State. Those are big numbers to do. And some of those passes against Penn State were downfield passes with the Naylor touchdown and the the touchdown to Trayvon Morgan. So, you know, I thought there were a lot of positive things to build off. And I think that with more reps, with more game experience, I think the kid's got a very bright future. Now, the question is whether or not it's at Michigan State or not.
You know, quarterback, you're going to have to compete just about everywhere. But
yeah,
the one thing you can be that Peyton Thorne is not is you can be brought in by the coach who's there. You can be the choice of the coach who's there. And that can, you know, the thing about quarterback, though, is it's such a, you know, Mel Tucker can want everything he wants right now. And I don't think he has anything against Peyton Thorne. I'm not suggesting that. But he can have sort of a plan. He can love Peyton or Hampton's face, size, and think they recruited the right guy. But quarterback is a different position than anything else. And the fact that, like, what do we remember about those Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, that Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl with Connor Cook? Yeah, he was 4 for 11. But the offense, which hadn't moved in a while, just moved differently with him in there. There was no way around that. And D'Antoni made some, you know, and Cook struggled early the next year and had some baffling games. But eventually you are people have seen Peyton Thorne. Like, if they had never seen him this year and he didn't ever win the job, but people have seen Peyton Thorne. Like, that, there's a bar that's going to have to be met. And the better quarterback's going to win the job. And he looks like a guy who's got a knack for the position. And so I still wouldn't be surprised if it is him, but I also wouldn't blame him or be surprised if he looked around the landscape, because I think he's somebody who's shown enough glimpses, and especially if he plays well this week, that some other program may say, hey, we'd like you to be our guy.
Comparison. How about a comparison? Because as I told you, I had heard the Drew Brees comparison last year after one of the fall camp scrimmages about him, and I know the previous staff just gushed over him. How about this for a comparison? Brian Hoyer. They're similar size, about 6'2", 210 in that range. Hoyer's a guy that was recruited by a different staff in a different system with John L. Smith, but Mark D'Antonio made it work. So –
The difference, I would say, and I'm not
and their styles are a little different, but again, we don't know the full breadth of Peyton Thorne, whereas he got on the field earlier than Hoyer did, in part because Hoyer was roadblocked by Stanton, but also because, you know, they needed him to, and I think he outplayed the veteran that was there, even though the veteran was hurt with Lombardi. That's why I think he gets the ball this week, is because I think he showed the propensity, as you said, to move the offense and get to the end zone.
Yeah, that second quarter was just different than anything Lombardi had put together. Even his stuff in Michigan, it was really good on the deep balls, and so like
line helped a lot too.
So did the play calling. I thought Jay Johnson was brilliant the way he protected him with all sorts of play action and motion I thought it was. I thought it in tempo when he needed it, but he got in a rhythm and he started hitting every throw. And that's what we haven't seen from Lombardi. And I think that's what ultimately ends Lombardi's reign. Lombardi is an interesting case to me, because here's a kid who's essentially a de facto captain, is the voice of the offense. He was sort of the opposite of the Antoine Simmons, you know, on offense. And I think beloved by his players, he's got this win over Michigan, and he'll be looked at as a Michigan, does he stick around, and knowing that he's been passed by a younger guy, that they've
maybe an older guy
brought in a transfer, right, who's played a lot, who looks like they're planning to have ahead of him. And the problem for Lombardi again is, you know, the underneath stuff that he struggles with, you know, they want you to make those throws in the MAC too. It's not like, and so a guy like,
do that at the FCS level as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a clear path for him on where he starts. I'm not saying he can't go home to Northern Iowa and there isn't an opportunity. I don't know what their quarterback situation is. I don't know, but where his deficiencies are deficiencies at every not every level. I mean, I think he could go down a couple levels and play. But does he want to, be used in a different role? The problem is all these guys can run. You know, it's not like, years ago, like if Brian Hoyer was actually the quarterback right now, you might have a package for Lombardi. Or Kirk Cousins was the quarterback. You could have a package for Lombardi. But, I think Peyton Thorne is faster than Lombardi, and this Anthony Russo, if he keeps the weight off, is probably as mobile as Lombardi. You know, so
It's tough. That's the one thing I think with Lombardi is taking the hits. I mean, until that Ohio State game, he absorbed a lot of hits. You know, he forced some throws, and I think that was a big thing from a time standpoint. You know, you're getting pressured, and you know, the decision making that wasn't there with the speed coming off the edge.
I think the question for him also becomes: Do you think you have more in you? Do you think you've gotten a fair look? Do you think you're better than you've shown? You know, if you think, some of these guys don't have a realistic understanding of who they are as a player. And some of these guys do. And, you know, Damian Terry, I remember having conversations with him at the very end. I mean, he was very at peace with things, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a rare kid. But some of these guys, you know, Rocky Lombardi also may say, you know, I've done some great things here. I'm going to keep competing for the job like hell, but I want to be here. But
it might not be his option at that point either. I mean, you've given him six games to start this year. He started 9 games in his career.
Yep.
And, you know, there's plenty of tape. And, you know, that's where a situation like this, the coaching staff's either going to have to be completely blunt, honest, ultimately that's got to be what they do. They got to either be honest about, hey, you're not going to start here. You're probably not going to play here unless it's in a backup capacity. Or tell him up front, say, you still do have a chance. We like this, this, this. You need to improve this, this, and this before we get to camp in the fall. I mean, there's a lot. And I do think that I've heard a lot of people talk about how open and honest Tucker is in terms of his assessment with those guys. And if you are at this point, you know, this goes a lot towards the future of bringing guys in that you want, right? I mean, if you are frank and honest and helpful, I think D'Antonio at times was like this as well. You know, if you are honest with these kids and say, your future is not here, but I will help you find your future. That'll go a long way, I think, to building those relationships that Tucker talked about. But it's not just about building the relationships with the recruits and the high school coaches and everything else. It's about, and he talked about this earlier in the season, about building the relationship within the team on a daily basis. And I think that's going to be the thing. I think a lot of those guys have an idea of what's going to happen for them individually, because I think Tucker has been constantly and perpetually talking with them about it throughout the course of the year, and the same with their position coaches.
All right, well, let's move on to our final segment of the podcast, as always, and this is our predictions. We'll talk about the Saturday's football game versus Maryland and then Sunday's Big Ten opener for men's basketball against Northwestern. Graham, your prediction for Saturday's game against Maryland?
Yeah, Tungavaloa, is that pronounced correctly?
This is a podcast where our main objective is to mispronounce everybody's names. Mostly on my end.
It's Naoteote.
Yeah. So, and if your brother's name's Tua, that's all I know. So Tua's brother is supposedly not probably playing in this game, and that makes a difference, I think, for Maryland, a considerable difference. And so I don't know where Michigan State's at. I don't know where a lot of people's heads will be this week. This could be a very fascinating week of Big Ten football. You look at Illinois, just fired their coach and then gets sent on the road to Penn State. Like, I mean, that could be, I mean, who knows? Those kids have fight in them left. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see from different programs. And for Michigan State, you get some kids who are declaring for the draft that sort of see the season is over. Like, you know, preparation level and sort of mindset in college football is a huge part of things. So, and I don't know where Maryland's heads. You know, it's a really good question. I think, I'm not going to pick Michigan State at this point. But I also wouldn't pick Maryland with the 2.5 points. Does that make any sense? I have no way of trusting either one of these teams. Yeah. I'm going to pick Maryland to win a close game. But I, you know, if you told me Michigan State beat them by 20 or Maryland beat Michigan State by 20, I'd believe you, because I just have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Maryland last week moved the ball against Rutgers. They put up some points, and then they still lost. You know, I think the other thing that comes into play with where these kids head at is, you know, they didn't even know who the hell they were playing until Sunday. So, I mean, this is just, this is like, not even like a playoff game. This is like a coin, like, this is like, we got a game coming up, guys, against someone. So, like, let's start getting ready. I mean, how do you gear up for that? I mean, this isn't a game that you had on your schedule circled, right? You didn't say, okay, we're going to go to Maryland this weekend, and, you know, that's how we're going to finish our regular season. No. I mean, so that I think comes into play for both of these teams as well. But it is a two-way factor, and I have no idea what to think either. I'm going to hedge my bets because I think I put that Michigan State would cover in the Gannett picks. But I just, you know, that was before Shakur Brown and Naquan Jones and, you know, if Antoine Simmons does, as I've kind of alluded to, if he's the next guy that, you know, sits out to protect his draft future, which is absolutely the smart decision for these guys at this point, I'd probably go with Maryland, but who knows? Because I mean, they've got a run game. That's the one thing. I mean, they had a dude pop off for 180 against Rutgers with Jake Funk, and you had 221 against Minnesota, and I don't know if Michigan State's faced a running back that's been able to do that this year.
Yeah, it is interesting that that players viewed this bonus game as like a bowl, like this was the time to announce. Like, it would not have occurred to me as a player that I announce now. The season isn't over. This was not a game that you had to qualify for, right? Like, when the hell did Shakur Brown and Naquan Jones think the season was over? Like, I mean, I understand you don't play now, probably once you've declared, because your head's not in it. You're thinking about your draft, whatever. But
finals are over as well. That's the other thing. This all came during finals week. If you add it up.
Yeah, but it's just strange. I think I would have waited. I would have thought next week I'll declare. You know, I mean, that would have been just natural for me.
Yeah, especially when you consider the fact that the Spartans might end up playing in a bowl game with all these teams that are bowing out, and Tucker saying this week that they would play if the opportunity arose.
I don't know if that's Tucker's call.
It's the finances will have to work. It'll have to, you know, there are a lot of things.
What is it? Ask yourself what it is. It's, you're not taking a trip. I mean, you're literally, if you go to a bowl game, in and out, it's just a road game. That's all that this is now. This isn't the same experience this year. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these programs opt out. I mean, they're not going to go to San Francisco like we did a couple years ago for the Red Box Bowl, spend a week in San Francisco. They're going to go there probably day before the game, do a walkthrough, play the game, and come home that night. And so what is it? What is it other than a cash grab?
Right.
And for a coach, and I don't think Tucker's thinking of it that way. Tucker's thinking of it one more chance to play.
Yeah, and Tucker is, you know, and what you don't get as a coach, you don't get what you usually get in a bowl game, which is 3-4 weeks of prep and younger guys and all that. And I also think, you know, I know it was a short season, but I think this has been a long haul for a lot of these guys. Players are tired too. Because you think about it, it's not just that. Yes, this was only 8-9 weeks. But this is the stopping and starting, the workouts that began in the summer, the not knowing. I think just the mental side of it. You got through this year. You know, you had some moments that you can build on. You move on, and you're happy you got 8 games in. I don't know that a bowl game makes a ton of sense this year. I know the coach and Mel Tucker probably wants it, and maybe there are some guys who would love the opportunity, but I would bet you in a sober moment, I don't mean sober by them just being drunk, but I just mean I would bet you if you really got an honest moment out of those players in a survey, I would bet more than half the locker room would be happy to skip a bowl game.
They would prefer to probably go home and spend time with their family after being on campus since June.
Predictions for the Michigan State's basketball game against Northwestern Sunday?
Pain.
Pain for the Wildcats or pain for you guys?
Pain for the Wildcats. it might be painful to see what happens to the Wildcats because I'm not, you know, I watched a little bit of the game against Pitt, and, you know, they were a cute story a couple years ago, but they're back to being Northwestern. And You know, I just think the Michigan State team is too deep, and, you know, again, but barring any guys being out that we don't know about that might happen, which always tends to happen right now because that's just the nature of everything, I think Michigan State wins this comfortably by 20-plus.
Yeah, it doesn't – I mean, Northwestern's got a lot of new pieces, and they just don't have enough guys that can push you at the Big Ten level. It's going to be a brutal year for them. You know, I mean, their AD has turned to – I mean – you know, their AD is, I don't know that Chris Collins, look, the Collins hire was the right hire at the time. But Jim Phillips, now the ACC commissioner, and I don't know, I mean, he did a lot of fundraising. There's a lot of good stuff. I just don't know that his hiring is warranted the praise that he gets everywhere, because Collins is not, somehow did not turn that NCAA tournament run into anything,
yeah,
recruiting wise. And that is a real disappointment there. They had their moment, but that's all it was. And, you know, frankly, if you know, that group with Cerna and Coble and all those guys under Bill Carmody had stayed healthy, Carmody would have gotten an NCAA tournament, and then this wouldn't have been as big a deal. And then there'd be some pressure on Collins, I think. I think because it was the first, he gets a little bit of a pass here. But, yeah, I expect MSU to roll. They've had a lot of time. This is a matchup I like for them. I think MSU is going to do better the competition goes, mostly, though. I think getting away from the in-state feisty mid-majors who's got some guards who can play isn't the worst thing in the world. And I think they're a team that's better off playing up, so to speak.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining me for the Spartan Speak this week. Coming up next is my conversation with the LSJ's Nate Atkins. We went pretty deep on Hampton Fay and breaking down what he can do for the Spartans once he gets on campus next year. Thanks, guys. I am blessed to be joined by Lansing State Journal sports storyteller Nate Atkins. Nate, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing well. I'm nice and cozy inside on signing day. Watch these commitments roll in. It's kind of snowy and blustery outside, but it's much warmer in here than where I was just two nights ago when I was out at Browns Ravens Monday Night Football in the snow. Well, not so much snow, but in the cold. And something I like to do about once every 10 years and let them, you know, let me down one more time. But it was a fun atmosphere, and it was fun to actually be at a live football game, considering everyone that we cover here, you know, they're not allowed to have any fans.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where this ranks on in terms of Browns losses, but I've got to believe that you had to drown your sorrows in something, perhaps a cold, refreshing Coors Light.
Yep, that was definitely a drink of choice that night. You know, it's interesting going to these. I didn't know how the concessions would work, but they're selling beer until 10 p.m., which was, for that kind of a game, was just after halftime. So definitely needed to tap back into it after that whole thing finished. And you know how it goes. Hollywood Brown running down the middle of the field. Justin Tucker doing the same game-winning field goal he's done against the Browns for like 75 years. And it was definitely time to grab a drink.
Yeah, and it's not just the Browns game. Life today in general is kind of a lot. It forces us to always be on, kind of like Baker Mayfield was, at least in the fourth quarter of Monday night's game against the Ravens. But every now and then, it's important to just stop, crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light, and chill. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. Coors Light is brewed with a three-step cold process: cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. The mountains on Coors Light cold activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection. This weekend is the conference title games for just about every conference. Non-stop great college football all day and night. It's the perfect time to make sure your refrigerator is stocked with the mountain cold refreshment of Coors Light, the beer that's made to chill. If life's pace is wearing you down, make sure you take a moment, pause, and refresh yourself with a cold Coors Light. You can even have Coors Light delivered straight to your door. Go to get.coorslight.com and find the local delivery options. Coors Light, made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Nate, did you have your Coors Light delivered straight to you, or were you able to pick it up on your own somewhere?
Oh, it was, long lines at the concession stands. Yes. And trying to be socially distanced while also fighting for positioning. So it was an interesting experience. It's interesting. I mean, that's one good thing that came out of Colorado. You know what else came from Colorado? Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
Some work on the recruiting trail today, signing day, and leading up to now, including the guy we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly, man. You should be the host of this podcast, man. What a segue.
I'm coming for your job. What?
Oh no, I gotta watch my back at every corner at this point. All right, there's a lot of good recruits at Michigan State today, but we want to focus on one in particular, and that is the most important position in football, and that is quarterback. And the Michigan State signed a 3-star QB. His name is Hampton Fay. He is out of Texas. And Nate, I know you've talked to him at least once, maybe twice, if I remember correctly. I think you did a story on him earlier in the year, shortly after he committed. So you probably know him just as well as any of us. So I guess what are your first impressions of him, and why do you think he's the most intriguing prospect in this class, as you wrote about yesterday?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. I mean, every quarterback's interesting, but the fact that they've been so keyed in on this guy so early without a lot of evidence has been just kind of a nice window into kind of how Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson think, what they go for, what they prioritize. Because you've got a guy who right now he's rated kind of as a low 3-star, which is almost entirely based on just the fact that he's not that experienced. He's played 10 games at quarterback. And he'd only played 3 last season when he got the offer from Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson. They offered him at Colorado, they offered him at Michigan State, and they didn't really offer any other quarterback. So they're very intrigued in the skill set, which is kind of how you have to view him, because he was a wide receiver for his first 2 years at a powerhouse in Dallas. It's just the way Texas high school goes, where you could have a Big Ten quarterback who's not starting at quarterback because you have too many of them. So he won a state championship there, transferred over to another Dallas area school and got the chance to start at quarterback, got injured as a junior, came back this year. And as we know, it's a bizarre year, only got 7 games in, and just was a tough year to kind of learn a new system. But long story short on him is he's 6'5". And he's obviously Mel Tucker loves the height potential, but he's 6'5". He's a hurdler, like I said, former wide receiver. So there's just a lot of athletic traits, and there's a strong enough arm, at least the raw power you see on film and his willingness to go down the field, that I think they just see that there's a lot that they can build around there. The big question, obviously, for him is, you know, only 10 games ever playing quarterback. I mean, how long is it going to take for him to get ready at a program that, frankly, does not have many answers at quarterback, does not have many plans at quarterback other than him. So he's going to enroll early next spring. He should be there for a spring game if they're allowed to have a spring game, and probably enters the competition at least for next year. But it's going to be a big climb for him given the fact that he hasn't played that much.
Yeah, so we have a couple snippets here that we're going to play throughout our discussion about Hampton Fay. And this first one here is about his thoughts on Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson and why this is a great fit.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were like my second offer coming out of my junior year, and only having 3 games under my belt, I knew that what they saw in me is what they believed in, and they had a lot of trust in. And they were one of the few that were able to quickly recognize the potential I had and what I could be, and that jumped out to me a lot. But just talking, you know, week by week, and developing my relationship with them, I was just able to see how much, like, we looked at the game the same way. Like, we both had that high energy and just that winning, you know, that winning mentality of, like, we were wanting to win at everything. And that was something that stuck with me compared to a lot of the coaches that I just talked with, where it was just kind of like, you know, we're going to win, but, like, you know, it wasn't that wasn't their, like, a focus point, whereas like Coach Tucker and Coach Johnson, like, that was their number one focus point. It was like, we just want to go win. We want to be consistent with it. And so we're going to get guys that can do that and be coachable. And so that was kind of the, like, thing, like, growing up, I've always, you know, it's been a winning, like, winning was my only thing. And, like, I didn't lose my first high school game until this year.
Okay, Nate, I want to come back to something that you mentioned. You talked about the 10 games. I think it's interesting that he's only played 10 high school games at quarterback. And I assume this feels like a diamond in the rough type situation here. And obviously Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson think they've got something here. I might be a little concerned about the lack of playing time at quarterback, but, like, I get the impression that you are not.
Oh, no, I think it's totally makes him a wild card. I mean, 10 games. And the thing about it, too, is it's just such 10 scattered games. 3 games as a junior, injured forever that season. He had a labrum injury, so he couldn't throw for a while. Then they're in a pandemic. Then he's trying to organize things over Zoom. They're learning a new offense. Then he comes in this year, and the way he described it is it just felt like they were learning the offense the whole season rather than running it. They tried to run basically what Art Briles ran at Baylor, where they hurry up to the line. Then they look to the sideline and get the play called based on how many guys are in the box, whether they're running or throwing, and then a lot of RPO off of that. So there's this idea of him as an RPO quarterback, which is exciting and it's modern, but it's definitely a gamble. I mean, he played pretty well. He threw 14 touchdowns to 6 picks last year, was really only throwing, and they didn't really let him run, even though he has the talent. But I mean, you see the rawness just in his numbers. He completed 60% of his passes. He only threw 200 yards a game, and his team went 4-3. So it was an up and down. It was almost like last year was his learning year rather than his showcase senior year. And so it is a gamble, but I know the way that Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson think with at this position specifically is they like going at guys in Texas, specifically Dallas, these very highly competitive areas where they could look at a guy like that and they say, yeah, it's imperfect and he didn't have a perfect season, but the competition is so high. It's hard to start, which is why he had to transfer schools, and it's hard to compete because you're going up against guys that are constantly going to Texas A&M, Texas Baylor, Texas Tech, national recruits. Right. And obviously he held his own well enough to do it there. I mean, still to be a first-year quarterback who is 3 games in his life and to go out there and be pretty efficient and at times explosive, some of the big plays he ripped off down the field. There's a lot to like there, but it's just a huge leap to go from that and, you know, to the point where you're going to kind of run a whole new scheme and get everyone on board. And, you know, he just hasn't had a lot of time spent on the field in those adverse situations, especially when he didn't play in front of many crowds this season. So I'm mostly intrigued by the fact that it's just such a big wild card element here for the one quarterback they're kind of banking on so far to be the quarterback of the future.
All right, let's listen to what Hampton Fay said about what Michigan State saw in him.
I think that they sense that because they understand how much of a competitor I am. I mean, they see it on the field. You know, I'm willing to, you know, do whatever it takes to go win. And in that, like, it also takes, you know, being a leader. And being a leader means you got to be vocal and you got to be confident, and you got to be the guy that's going to watch the most film. You got to be the one that, you know, wins all the reps. And so it all comes back down to just like winning and being competitive. And that's mm-hmm. something they sense in me, where, you know, a lot of quarterbacks these days, they get so caught up in rankings and just the overall stars and everything like that, where, I mean, we'll go out and, I mean, it doesn't matter who it is, we're going to go win a game. So I think that's kind of the one thing they kind of sense from me, is something that they're going to try to implement into their program, where we're going to get the guys that are going to do whatever it takes to go win. And yeah. We're going to get, you know, the biggest guys, and we're going to develop them, and we're going to have their mindset as we're going to go win every single game, out of who the opponent is.
Very interesting comment there from Fay. Well, let's move on to you kind of touched on his potential and what he can do at Michigan State. I mean, do you see him being in the quarterback race right away because of what you said about how Tucker and Johnson want those battle-tested Texas QBs, or this is a situation where he might have to wait a while?
Well, certainly, ideally, you want him to wait. I think that, you know what I've said on this podcast, I don't think quarterbacks should start as true freshmen unless they're like Trevor Lawrence, so far and above and beyond and experienced enough to come in and do it. Deshaun Watson was close to that. Those are guys that played forever in high school, though. So to come in with 10 games and start in the Big Ten as a true freshman and to try and kind of be the leader of this team, it's a tall ask. But at the same time, it has to be on the table based on what we've seen this year, where, you know, you've got Rocky Lombardi, who's been here for 3 or 4 years and, you know, just hasn't looked like a guy with a very high ceiling. You've got Peyton Thorne, who did some very nice things on Saturday, but, you know, he's a different style of player than Hampton Fay. He's not built on his ability to drive it vertically, which is what they're all about here. So a lot of this is going to come down to two things. Number one, if they get a transfer quarterback, obviously, and that would answer the question. They're not starting Hampton Fay over a transfer quarterback. But number two, also, if they don't, you know, whose arm is most flashing in spring ball and who's kind of the most I guess, energizing force. And that second one, he's behind the eight ball because obviously Rocky and Peyton Thorne have been here. Peyton's got the connection with Jaden Reed. There's all this stuff going on that Hampton Faye's just way behind on. And also, I mean, quite frankly, what's the state of our country this spring and how readily available is it for a freshman to step in and really build a bond? I mean, if it's still a lot of Zoom meetings and such, I mean, that is not going to be the time for a new face to come in and win it over. But the argument in his favor is that this is a young team, and it's like it's not the same. He's not coming in and having to win over all these big-time veterans. I mean, this is a team trying to find its way a little bit, and there's a possibility that Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson say, let's find our way with this freshman quarterback and take our lumps, but know that it's going to build. But I have a feeling I wouldn't put the odds on him winning it. I'd put it on either Peyton Thorne or transfer quarterback and ideally redshirt a kid like this.
Yeah, but Tucker did say today he's not afraid to play a freshman. So I think that's something to keep in mind as well. I believe the exact quote is here. We're not afraid to play freshmen. We showed that already this season. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
And like I said, a lot of it's going to come down to where we are in the pandemic, because this year we've talked about how hard it is to play freshmen, and yet they've done it. So next year, if it is a more normal year, they might even lean a little bit more toward playing freshmen. But the one thing I'd say is it's different to play a freshman running back where you tell him hit this hole, a freshman nickelback where you tell him guard this guy, compared to quarterback, which is kind of trying to lift everybody up. It's such a leadership-based position that's the kind of hard part. That's where you're almost as much behind as anything mentally or physically, is the ability to come in and get all these guys to believe and to communicate exactly what you want. For a guy who's played 10 games, I think is going to have a hard time doing that. But, what I've also learned about him is a big reason why they liked him is they like his personality and they like his kind of natural leadership communication and competitiveness. So if they are that in love with his traits in that sense, then I do think he has a chance to make up that ground and possibly win some people over.
What do you think is his best attribute?
I think his best attribute is it's his legs to kind of extend a play and then marry that with his arm. So it's kind of a two-part answer, but he's a hurdler who played wide receiver. And one of the things this is what Peyton Thorne's doing well right now, is the ability to extend the play, to get out of the pocket, to find new places on the field to throw, and then go down the field is very critical. It's why almost all the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and now you're seeing this in college, are guys who can move around and extend the play, because it's just not likely you're going to have tackles who are so dominant that they can create such a pocket to let those routes develop to where guys win at the top of the route. So you see it all the time. And one thing I will say for him that he really showed this year that I know he was hammering in on was doing that where you scramble out, but don't scramble to run, scramble to throw, scramble to see the field in a new way. And I think that's going to be the thing they love the most about him, is just kind of this big guy who's hard to bring down, who's able to scramble out, get out of the pocket. There's a little bit of his high school coach compared him to Cam Newton, which I think is going too far because Cam Newton's such a tank. But Dak Prescott, I feel elements of that in a very raw, high school level sense, where he's hard to bring down, he can move around, and he's still looking to win with his arm. And I think that's what they'll like best.
And we'll cap off the Hampton Faye conversation with a clip of Nate's interview with Hampton Faye talking about his impressions of Michigan State and his potential going forward.
I've been able to watch him quite a bit. Yeah. I know they've had a kind of rough little, bumps in the road, but, I think the coaches have done really well. As far as just being the, a new staff coming into a COVID year, not really having much time to prepare with the players, they didn't get any spring training and hardly anything over the summer. All they had was maybe a Zoom class or so, but they were able to only start it in September or in the fall, so they only had like however many practices to start before the season with the new staff and trying to bond with the team and everything like that. So, and especially with the players, like, they didn't know what they were going into. They don't let the coaches have them for them, and there's just a lot of questions around, but I think the coaches were able to come in and just say, hey, this is who we're going to be. Here's the process, and we're going to go do it. And so, you know, you'll see a couple games where, you know, you see spurts of that where they do really, really good. And like the first half, you know, they go out and they're, you know, the offense is doing really well. And then the second half, it's just not as consistent. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things right now. I think Coach Tucker would agree is the consistency with the team. And I think, you know, with that comes time and training. I think that's one thing that they just didn't have yet. Super exciting to see, you know, that they're willing to go and they're willing to go down the field and score, you know, 50 points on someone. And I think they're capable of doing that. They got the offense for that. And, you know, it just kind of goes back, you know, to the spring training part. They don't know who the guys are yet. Like, I understood that they kind of had a situation in the QB room where they weren't quite sure about, you know, who their guy was going to be. And yep. So there's a lot of questions in that. And, you know, you got guys, you know, out wide that are incredible athletes. And I think, you know, if you look back at that Michigan game, they knew really well of, you know, who to attack. And so they attacked vertically in that game. And they knew who the weakest corner was, and they're going to put the best matchup on him and run a double move, and we're going to get big-time plays. And so you can see that on television. You can just – I can just kind of eye that and be like, you know, that's great coaching right there. They see that in film, and they go out and they execute it on the game day. So, I mean, yeah, and as far as, like, fitting into the offense, you know, and as a player, like, I want to score 50 against every team out there. You know, I don't ever want to say, hey, let's be conservative, let's run the clock out, you know. Of course, there's times when you need to do that, but, you know, if I'm going to expand that gap, you know, to as much as I can so that other team doesn't have a chance of winning. And, you know, through that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities, so you just got to be consistent in those times. So that's one of the key things going into it, I think, is just being a consistent quarterback that in the offense where, you know, we don't give up, you know, so many turnovers and give the other team opportunities.
All right, Nate. Well, let's move on to our last segment, our predictions for this week's Big Ten games, the final week of the season for the Big Ten Conference, bowl games not excluded. I will recap what happened last week. Last week, I went 4-1, denied a perfect week, unfortunately, but I did better than Nate, who went 3-2 last week, so that puts me up two games on Nate with me 27-14 and Nate 25-16 with five games to go this week. Nate, you're in a precarious position here.
It's all because of the canceled games. I was going to win every single one of those picks, and you were going to lose them.
Yes, of course.
But they didn't happen. And no, we don't need to look up what we actually picked and what the math is. I'm just assuming that to be true.
Yeah, the one game I gained on you last week was Nebraska-Minnesota. You took the Huskers. I took the Golden Gophers, and the Golden Gophers came out on top.
I can never pick Nebraska, right? That's one of the 85 reasons they need to leave the Big Ten.
All right, well, let's start. Speaking of the Cornhuskers, we'll kick off our picks here with Nebraska at Rutgers.
I never picked this team right, so if I were to pick Nebraska, Rutgers would win and you would gain on me. So I'm going to chicken out and pick Rutgers. I just think Rutgers is something nice going here. I mean, that was an emotional win last week over Maryland to do it in overtime, and just some of the stories about some of the players on the team that lost relatives and to fight through that and get a win over Maryland, I think you can just see certain things coming together for them. That one last game, and you're going to match up Greg Schiano on Scott Frost, which right now feels like a pretty big mismatch. So I'll go with Rutgers.
I am taking Rutgers as well. Okay, Michigan State at Maryland.
Yeah, this is so tough because of the game we are always playing of who's available. And that goes for both teams because Michigan State's got guys declaring for the draft on defense. We don't know if they're going to play. Maryland has their quarterback situation up in the air with Talia, Tua's little brother. Not sure if he's going to play. So this one is like as coin flip as it gets. I'm going to go with Michigan State just based on some of the things they showed last week. Peyton Thorne, I thought, grew in his willingness to go down the field and just getting other receivers involved. I think they'll continue to do that. And I'm just willing to bet on that offense a little bit more than a team that I don't even know if they're going to have the quarterback that's made them go this season. So it could go any of a million ways, but I'll go with Michigan State.
Yeah, Peyton Thorne had the quarter of his life last weekend when he led three consecutive scoring drives for 21 points and three passing touchdowns as well. Good times. But I am going to take Maryland in this one. I might... I will not change this, unfortunately. If Tagliavoa does not play, there might be a situation where I'm just like, oh boy, I've made a mistake here. But I will stick with Maryland. So, all right, Northwestern at Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game.
Northwestern's always a nice story when they're able to make it this far. But, you know, we watched Michigan State take them down with just a little bit of a vertical attack, and they're now going to face an Ohio State team that is that times about 80. And I just don't think Northwestern has the athletes to keep up with that. Even though I think they'll do some things on their own on offense, and this won't, you know, this could stay decently close for stretches. I think Ohio State's too much and is going to win this fairly easily.
Yeah, I mean, Northwestern's defense has been pretty strong all year, so it'd be interesting if they can keep the points down in this one. And if they can, they have a shot. But I'm not betting against Ohio State at this point either. I got the Buckeyes. So Minnesota at Wisconsin.
It feels like two teams that are just so ready to get the season over with. Minnesota seems like they've turned a corner a little bit, while Wisconsin has been struggling, especially on offense. It's tough, but you know what? I got to try and come back in this thing. So I'm going to go with Minnesota. It's a rivalry game, and I think they're feeling just enough right now to kind of try to pounce on Wisconsin as they're a little bit down. So I'm going to go with the Gophers pulling a upset here.
Yeah, I thought about taking Minnesota here just because we look at Wisconsin. They scored, what, 6 and 7 points in the last 2 weeks? So that is
so much for the Graham Mertz Heisman campaign, huh?
Yeah, that thing crashed into a ravine like in Back to the Future 3, and it may never come back.
Good reference.
Thank you. Timely. Anytime you could reference a 30-year-old movie, you've got to be able to do that. All right. Last Big Ten game, Illinois at Penn State.
Yeah, this is Penn State. I mean, Illinois just fired Lovie Smith. There's just not much going on for them to play for, whereas Penn State, it felt that way a few weeks ago, but I think we're seeing them finally kind of get it together and try and just get back to – it seems like they're playing more just for pride at this point. You know, get some things going and trying to have some kind of 500 season. And I just think Penn State's got too much on defense for all the issues that Illinois is trying to deal with, the kind of things that turned that game around against Michigan State in the pass rush. You know, that'll come alive and win it for Penn State.
Yeah, I like Penn State as well. They've played really great the past 2 weeks, and it seems like they are clicking now, and probably something they wish they had at the beginning of the year. But so it goes. Well, Nate, this is fun. I don't know if this is the last time we will do this or not, because they're – so many teams are bowing out of the bowl games, and Mel Tucker said this week that they would play if the chance came up. So win or lose against Maryland this weekend, they might be playing in a bowl game next to the following weekend, regardless of this. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I get it. It's the same thing. The other first-year coach is not named. I guess Jeff Hafley at Boston College is not doing this, but it's a good way to showcase what you're trying to build and just the kind of styles you want to play. If other teams are going to bow out, it opens up a little bit more of the spotlight for you to just kind of own a Saturday. And I totally get it. It's one more game to evaluate some players on the roster. So, I mean, the season wasn't going to be a successful win-loss type year for Michigan State. So, you know, if they feel like it's in their best interest with the health risks. And I mean, there'll be guys opting out of it, but yeah, I totally understand why Mel Tucker wants to try this.
All right. Well, Nate, maybe we'll see you next week. Maybe we won't. It'll be a surprise either way for
big mystery
for our loyal listeners as they get ready to celebrate Christmas. All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Nate_Atkins_, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.